Your money can do more than you think. It can help protect the climate, support biodiversity and empower women around the world. Karen and Sina from Oikocredit take you on a journey in their podcast Ethics and Euros. From coffee farms in Peru to solar energy projects in India, you'll discover the real impact your money can have. Your money, your choice. Tune in now.
A warm welcome to this slightly different podcast episode. My name is Karen, and today I'm taking you on a journey to Brazil. Instead of recording in our usual studio in Cologne, I'm out on the road to explore what actually happens once investors' money is put to use. Where does it go? And more importantly, what real impact does it have on the ground? Over the next few days, I'll be visiting partner organizations of Oikocredit and meeting people who are building their own businesses with the help of microloans. People whose everyday lives are changing in very tangible ways. What particularly interests me is, what role does microfinance play in their lives? And why is it so often women who take the step into self-employment? What I do not yet know at this point, this journey will show me that microfinance is much more complex than I've thought. My journey begins in Sao Paulo, at Oikocredit's regional office. Here, I meet two of my colleagues, Constantine and Nico. They work closely with our partner organizations here on the ground. Before we travel to the south of Brazil together, I want to get to know them and their work. The recording device is running, and I asked them to introduce themselves.
Hey, Karen, thanks for the invitation. It's a pleasure meeting you with you. My name is Constantine, and I am an investment officer in Sao Paulo office of Oikocredit.
And we're going to talk about what investment officer means in a second, but Nico, up to you.
Okay. Hi, Karen. Welcome to our office in Sao Paulo. My name is Nicolas Viedma. I'm the investment manager for Oikocredit in Brazil, Argentina, Paraguay, and Uruguay. I joined Oikocredit 11 years ago, and it's a pleasure to have you here.
And talking about investment officer, so what's your responsibility in the office here? What do you do?
So the monitoring takes more than 50% of our routine. So when we talk about monitoring, we are talking about financial monitorings. Monitoring is the ESG as well, right? And the communications with the partner. Plus, we have the focus on origination. Okay, so the opportunities that have not been explored yet in the sector that we are.
Origination means to find the new prospect partners and also to prepare the credit proposals and assess whether they are riskier or not, or acceptable within the guidelines and the, what your targets.
And Nico, what do you do?
So my role is in a way similar to what Constantine mentioned, but to deal with the organizations that we already have in our portfolio, to manage this portfolio, roughly 50, 60 partners scattered in these countries for an amount of 70, 80 million euros that we manage here. And also to identify new partners, collaborate with investment officers to see if they are fit for Oikocredit. Social aspects and risk aspects.
What quickly becomes clear here, a large part of the work consists of closely supporting the existing partner organizations. At the same time, my colleagues are constantly looking for new organizations that are a good fit for Oikocredit. Nico goes on to explain that Oikocredit has been active in the Bapu region for over 30 years and has built a large network here. New investment opportunities therefore often arise organically from existing contacts. Interestingly, the portfolio is evenly divided across three sectors in which the partner organizations operate.
That's also something interesting in our hub, that we have a sort of a balanced portfolio in terms of sectors. Well, not so intentionally, but eventually it creates an interesting balance. We have, let's say, a third of portfolio in agriculture partners in different crops, mostly in Argentina. Then another third is also located in banks and organizations that have a focus or at least a priority on SME institutions. So we call them SME banks. And here in Brazil, most important are the organizations that have a microfinance portfolio.
SME stands for small and medium-sized enterprises. Oikocredit specifically finances SMEs because they are considered to be the engine of the economy and play a key role in driving development in the region. At the same time, these companies often have difficulty obtaining financing because they're frequently not attractive enough for conventional banks. In Brazil, most partner organizations are active in the field of inclusive finance. I will get to know one of the partners in the microfinance sector in the next few days. Luckily for me, Nico and Consta had already planned visits to partner organizations and invite me to accompany them on their journey. Such visits take place once or twice a year and are extremely important for many reasons. They strengthen the relationship between both parties and give my colleagues the opportunity to gain an up-to-date picture of the organization's situation, identify potential problems, and clarify open questions directly. So the two of them take me to the south of Brazil, to the state of Santa Catarina. In the city of Florianópolis, which is particularly well known among tourists for its beautiful beaches and good surf, we meet the next morning with an important and long-standing partner organization of Oikocredit, the microfinance organization Banco do Empreendedor. We are welcomed by Guilherme Cordeiro, the CEO of Banco do Empreendedor. The organization has been an Oikocredit partner since 2014. He shows me around the premises of the microfinance organization, introduces me to each and every employee, and explains exactly what their organization does.
A nossa atuação, ela é bem presencial.
What we do is provide small loans to people at the base of the pyramid, people who need financing to improve their work or grow their small businesses. Most of our clients are active in services or a small trade. We work less with industrial businesses. The loans help them run their daily operations and maintain a stable income.
So many clients mainly use the loans to secure their livelihoods. For example, they run a small shop and finance their running costs with them. The loans are generally relatively small. On average, they amount to around 6,000 Brazilian reais, about 1,000 euros, with an upper limit of around 40,000 reais, around 7,000 euros, for long-standing clients who have already successfully repaid several loans. Often the loan amounts increase step by step, in parallel with the growth of the respective business. Guilherme tells me that Banco do Empreendedor has existed for almost 30 years, and that the organization has been active in microfinance from the very beginning. However, the idea did not originate in Brazil, but in Bangladesh. There, Mohamed Yunus developed the concept of microloans, for which he later even received the Nobel Peace Prize. This model was then gradually transferred to other parts of the world, including Brazil. Guilherme describes how exactly this happened as follows.
What happened was this. The state governor of Santa Catarina visited Mohamed Yunus in Bangladesh to learn about the microcredit model. When he returned, he decided to implement something similar in Santa Catarina. He brought together several organizations and institutions and said, "We need to build this. How do we do it?" Around 19 entities were involved in those early discussions. One of them was Banco Empreendedor, who became the first organization to formally register as a legal entity under this new microcredit initiative.
For me, this makes the visit to Banco do Empreendedor all the more special. I'm not just speaking with a microfinance institution, but with one of the very first organizations that helped bring this concept to Brazil in the first place, and that continues to actively carry it forward to this day. I also meet Camila and Fernanda, two loan officers who are responsible for lending to clients and who are in close contact with them. They offer to let me accompany them on one of their routine visits to get to know two clients of Banco do Empreendedor. So I get the chance to see exactly where Oikocredit investors' money flows and to discuss it directly with clients. So we set off to visit the first client, Isabel Rangel Piloto. She runs a school with her husband that specializes in martial arts.
So my name is Isabel. I'm one of the owners of this school. It's a school of Chinese knowledge. We teach here like martial arts, archery, tai chi, yoga, and a lot of other things. But I think the main purpose of our school is to help people gain more health and be more happy and be more and live longer.
The courses are aimed at a broad audience. Currently, people between 5 and over 80 years old are learning here. What is particularly important to them is that the methods work for everyone, meaning they're not based on strength or body size, but on technique. She has financed her school in part with microloans from Banco de Emprendedor and has been the client since 2016. She mainly uses the loans for investments, for example, for new equipment such as an air conditioner, but also to cushion fluctuations in income, for example, during the summer month when FIO courses take place. After these first impressions, we make our way to the second client, Lucirene João Figueiredo. Lucirene is a micro-entrepreneur who today runs a small beauty shop, but her path there was not entirely straightforward. Originally, she had a different business idea. She opened a shop that sold beauty products on one side and sweets on another. However, she quickly realized that the care products in particular sold well and adjusted her concept accordingly. She opened her current shop focusing on beauty products such as makeup and care items. I want to know from her what role the loan from Banco do Empreendedor played in this.
The loan from Banco de Emprendedor has changed everything. Without the loan, I wouldn't have had the capital to buy my products and start this shop with beauty products. Because where I buy my goods, everything is usually paid up front. I didn't have sufficient money, so the bank was essential for lending me money and to be able to start my new business.
So it is clear, without this loan, Lucirene would hardly have managed her restart. And interestingly, both clients told me this. Repayment to Banco do Empreendedor is structured in such a way that it fits well into their everyday lives. The installments are manageable, and if everything is repaid on time, the final installment is even waived. These two visits gave me a very concrete insight into the clients' daily lives and show what role these loans play for them. At the same time, however, it also becomes clear to me, these are not isolated cases. Behind these stories lies an entire network that makes such development possible in the first place. That is exactly what I want to learn more about. And for that, I meet someone who knows this network like few others. Pedro Ananias Alves is a long-standing advisor to various microfinance organizations, including Banco de Emprendedor. He worked for over 30 years at a state development bank and was instrumental in establishing microfinance in the state of Santa Catarina. He helped develop an entire network of microfinance institutions that still exist today. That is why I first want to know from him why such organizations are needed at all.
Brazil actually has a very strong and highly regulated financial system. But that's also a problem. Because of that, it struggles to reach informal entrepreneurs, people who don't have official registration, a credit history, or anything to back up a loan. There are more than 40 million of these entrepreneurs in Brazil who simply cannot access credit. That's where organizations like OCPs come in. They focus specifically on self-employed people and help close that gap. Because access to credit is key. When people can borrow money, they can build their own business, create jobs, and often support their families as well. And that's how you start to reduce inequality.
In this context, Pedro repeatedly mentions the term OCP. The word comes up constantly during my time in Brazil. It is a real peculiarity of the financial system here. An OCP is essentially a non-profit organization comparable to an NGO. The difference is that it is officially recognized by the state and therefore has certain rights, for example, to offer microfinance. Around half of these OCPs in Brazil are partner organizations of Oikocredit. However, this flexibility also brings concrete risks. Because microfinance partly takes place outside the traditional banking system, there is a danger that people take out loans from multiple providers at the same time and thus become over-indebted without this always being immediately visible. Guilherme explains what consequences this can have and how Banco do Empreendedor deals with it.
We are very careful when it comes to over-indebtedness. Since microcredit sits partly outside the traditional financial systems, we have to double-check everything. So we look within the microcredit network, but we also check official systems, like Brazil's credit bureau, where all loans are registered. That gives us a full picture of someone's debt, and it really matters. Just today, a colleague mentioned a case where a client went through the whole process. But when we finally checked, we discovered significant overdue debt elsewhere. Without these tools, it would be very hard to assess risk properly. Because the reality is not everyone is fully transparent about their financial situation. So we always have to verify carefully.
What becomes clear here is microfinance only works if it is closely monitored and carefully assessed, especially when people can use multiple sources of financing at the same time. This is also extremely important for Oikocredit, because my colleagues must carefully examine how potential partners operate before granting any loan, what processes they have, how they assess risks, and above all, how responsibly they treat their clients. But how exactly do they select the organizations Oikocredit works with? And how is it ensured that they act responsibly? I had asked Nico and Consta this before our departure.
Every month or every 2 months, we go in rounds around the country and we visit the current partners that we have. That could take maybe a week visiting them, monitoring how they are evolving over the year, what we can do, how we can offer support as well. And typically we visit a new prospect or maybe a consultant that knows a possible prospect that understands the type of organization that Oikocredit works. Mm-hmm. So this sourcing happens whenever we are traveling, we are with the partners and with prospect partners.
That's exactly the kind of routine visit we are on right now. In addition to visiting Banco de Emprendedor, Consta and Nico have several other partner visits on their list. And also included, a visit to a potential new partner. But how do they ensure that both existing and new partners fit Oikocredit? What criteria must they meet?
Well, luckily in Brazil, not in the region, but in Brazil, there's the pre-screening and the post-disbursement follow-up. So the two moments, of course, pre-screening is more relevant because we want to understand if the ESG ambition aligns with ours. Mm-hmm. So we have a minimum score or minimum objectives that they do have to comply. Otherwise, it's a no-go, mm-hmm. and so we won't progress.
So it's like a criteria catalog that we have?
Exactly. Otherwise, you would be knocking the door of any bank around, mm-hmm. and it would be quite easy to deploy funds, but without any intentionality or mm-hmm. social and climate intentionality. Our position with the NGO sector is sort of a step that is much easier to navigate the ESG requirements of this. And likewise, the cooperative financial system, the alignment with our vision is much stronger. And most of the times they do have an ESG agenda underway. Mm-hmm. So we are sort of monitoring how they are progressing this. Mm-hmm. One specific case, they even have an internal institute for social performance management. So they do financial education, they do the workshops, they train their new staff and they are a large organization. So in that sense, ESG pre-screening process is not that difficult. Of course, it's an entry barrier to us identify new partners because we don't want them to low too much the requirements. Mm-hmm. After disbursement, then it's a matter of monitoring whether the outreach is increasing, decreasing, if they continuously keep the policies and there's lots of initiatives that we check beforehand, like do they check the quality of the services, if they do have like a sort of feedback systems to. So every year the same question is asked. Mm-hmm. Did you interview your staff to see if their satisfaction is low? Do you have compliance measures? Are you still training your ethics code? So the same questions sounds a bit repetitive for the partner. But it's sort of a way of measuring whether this is deteriorating or still progressing over here.
Nico touches here on an important part of their work, because Oikocredit only works with partner organizations that meet certain standards. That is why, before granting a loan, they carefully examine how these organizations themselves grant loans and what incentives they set internally. Especially in the microfinance sector, there's recurring criticism because employees receive commission for concluded loans. This can lead to loans also being granted to people who cannot actually afford them. Guilherme explains how Banco de Emprendedor deals with this issue.
No microcrédito.
In the field of microcredit, it's complicated to offer strong commissions because we cannot push sales aggressively. Because at the end of the day, credit isn't something we sell, it's something we carefully analyze. So yes, we do need to identify clients and make sure people know we are there. But we can't and we shouldn't create a system where agents feel pressured to approve loans just to meet targets. That's really important. So instead, we keep incentives fairly modest and balanced. There might be a small bonus for bringing in new clients and then some recognition when people reach certain portfolio milestones, like managing 1-2 million reais and so on. Because managing a larger portfolio does come with more responsibility. But the key idea is the incentives should support good judgment, not distorted.
Bônus para auxiliar na administração da carteira.
Now back again to the conversation with Pedro, with whom I'm sitting in the office of Banco de Emprendedor. One topic I would like to explore in more detail: the role of women and their situation in Brazil. Because the more I've seen and heard in the discussions with colleagues and especially during the visits to the two clients, the stronger one impression becomes. It is often women who take the step into self-employment, who take on responsibility and who break new ground. Is that really the case? That is exactly what I've asked Pedro, and he confirms.
There was already a trend of women taking on a bigger role in supporting their families before 2020. But the pandemic really pushed this further. For many, becoming an entrepreneur wasn't a choice, but a necessity. To earn extra income or even support the whole household. And that's very common in Brazil. At the same time, women often use loans very responsibly. Women are more focused, and when managing a business, they tend to be more attentive to regulations, environmental standards, competition rules, and so on. That's why loans to women often perform better.
This observation is no coincidence. In microfinance, lending to women is considered particularly effective. This is partly because many women invest the money directly in their families and thus create long-term stability. At the same time, they are still among those worldwide who are most frequently excluded from access to financial services. That is exactly why many Oikocredit partners place a special focus on women's empowerment. What does this look like in concrete terms here in Brazil? What obstacles do women face when they want to become self-employed?
Well, from the point of view cultural,
there are still some cultural barriers, especially at home. Many women carry a double burden, running a business while also taking care of the household. That can be challenging. Legally, though, things have improved a lot. So today, the main barriers are more about traditional roles and expectations. But this is slowly changing. Economic pressure, especially during the pandemic, has pushed many families to rely more on women's income. So despite the challenges, women are increasingly becoming a driving force in entrepreneurship.
Women therefore take on a central role in many cases, economically, but also for their families. At the same time, it is becoming increasingly clear that these advances do not take place in a vacuum. There is another factor that is increasingly influencing the reality of many people's lives. And that also determines how stable these advances actually are: climate change. That is why I want to better understand what role this topic plays in Oikocredit's work and how the effects of climate crisis are concretely felt here in Brazil. I also spoke about this with Constantine and Nico. Over the past few days, I have repeatedly heard that Oikocredit wants to invest more strongly in renewable energies, a sector that has so far not played a major role in the portfolio here in the region. I want to understand what approaches exist here in Brazil and in the entire Bapu region.
Oikocredit is positioned in renewable energies for quite a while. Mm-hmm. I think we have an interesting portfolio in Africa at this point. And we are collaborating with the centralized unit on climate. Mm-hmm. We're collaborating to have more leads coming, more opportunities coming. And then we have simultaneously one opportunity happening in Argentina, another one in Brazil. Mm-hmm. Maybe Constant can comment to this, what is this opportunity mm-hmm. about? And so.
Sure, of course. It's very important to touch on RE because Brazil has a very clean energy matrix from its essence. So most of the electricity produced is from hydropower, right? Yeah. The strategy that we are trying to start inside RE, it starts with a very basic and the most abundant source of energy, which comes from the sun. And Brazil
has a lot of sun.
Has a lot of sun.
I can agree. Although lately, you know, in Sao Paulo, not so much. To be well.
Despite these rainy seasons, sun is very abundant. In the northeast, in the Midwest of Brazil, in the countryside of the state of Sao Paulo, where our office is based. And it's very important to also to highlight that Brazil presents to be a very stable region for the strategy for microcredits. Mm-hmm. So we have stability, you know, in the essence of our economy. And demand for clean energy and goes in line with electrification trends from the consumer goods, from the vehicles, how to change from the polluting cooking to a more cleaning cooking alternative. So, yeah.
The area of renewable energies is therefore to be further expanded in Brazil and across the entire Bapu region. At the same time, however, it also becomes clear, climate protection is only one side of the story. While new projects are emerging, the impacts of the climate crisis are already being felt in Brazil and also for Oikocredit's partner organizations. I therefore want to know, where do the effects of climate change become concretely visible here in Brazil?
Maybe the strongest one we saw was in the south Brazil, in Rio Grande do Sul. Mm-hmm. And last year, there was a disaster in the south, in Rio Grande do Sul, a region where we have a lot of financing and cooperatives active, our partners. Maybe 100 cities were flooded simultaneously through a very heavy rains. And it was so heavy that even the dams around the capital, which is Porto Alegre, they were sort of they could not absorb that amount of water. And so lots of cities were drowned. I think what expresses more intensively is that the branch that we visited during our due diligence, maybe 2021 or 22, it was flooded up to the second floor. So exactly where we were, of course, we were not putting our money in the branch. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter exactly. Mm-hmm. That branch eventually was closed down. Mm-hmm. We're more concerned about the families. But the rice producers around that region lost maybe 90% or everything of their production. There was a lot of governmental programs to stabilize, but also the cooperatives played an important role because they have to deal with their losses, but they also have to provide or reschedule, find ways to contribute. Mm-hmm. It was a national problem because it was sort of intervention in the state to support. So a lot of financial resources were also given to the state. But it's still a recovery in progress. It would take maybe 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. And so that's for sure a climate change situation.
These examples once again make it clear to me. Climate change is already a reality here and has a very concrete effect on people's life. At the same time, it is precisely here that it becomes evident what role microfinance can play. It helps to cushion such crises and support people in difficult situations. I also discussed this with Pedro.
Climate change is hitting small entrepreneurs in Brazil especially hard. They are very vulnerable because they often don't have savings, insurance, or financial reserves. We see this a lot in rural areas, for example, in the Amazon, where we work with small farmers to help them adopt more sustainable and resilient practices. The idea is not just to protect the environment, but also to protect their income. Because when climate events hit, their livelihoods are at risk. We also help with things like market access, making sure farmers actually get paid for their products. And that stability is key, so they don't have to rely on unsustainable practices. So overall, climate change is a big challenge. But microfinance can help people adapt, stay financially stable, and build more sustainable businesses.
In addition to the direct effects on people, climate change also brings financial risks, especially for the partner organizations themselves. My colleague Nico explains how they deal with this.
Specifically, partners that have exposure in agriculture, they are the ones that are affected most intensively. Typically, then the governmental programs on insurance, public insurances do play a role there in buffering a bit, but the cooperative's strength is important. Luckily for us, it's a buffer, so EcoCredit has lost resources out of an adverse climate event. But the financial intermediary, which is our partner, they do have restructuring using their buffer to continue honoring the obligations with EcoCredit, but at the same time servicing the partners. And this is an important role of the organization, but they do need more and more muscles to deal with those.
This means the collaboration does not end with the granting of the loan. It really begins there and is shaped by regular exchange and close support. But one question remains. How do we actually know whether the support truly has an impact? In other words, whether people's lives actually improve, even in difficult times, for example, due to economic uncertainties or climate change. To find this out, EcoCredit works together with its partner organizations using a special approach.
Basically, is a technology that EcoCredit, through its capacity building unit, provides to help partners to create a survey that is methodological accurate to check whether the livelihood of the end client is improving or deteriorating.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that has been promised and discussed for decades because it's not so easy to track these movements. Maybe you can easily identify that the income is improving or declining because you check this when you are given a loan. But all the rest, all the other dimensions of life, we had to develop this program internally. And luckily, we've been more than now, maybe the fourth year, promoting this in alliance with some clients. So it's sort of a technical assistant that we provide.
That means it is not just about granting loans, but also about understanding what they actually change in people's lives. Nico continues.
And it comprises basically structuring a survey every year with a partner to be run digitally or in person with more than 300,000 to 500,000 end clients. And after they gathered all this data, also help the partner with assessing this data and taking action as in creating strategic planning out of the data.
So the partners survey hundreds or even thousands of their clients every year and especially examine how their living situation is developing. From this, they derive important insights for improving their services. The survey is also important in order to obtain a holistic picture of the living conditions of individual clients. Nico continues.
It's like a multidimensional way of measuring poverty. We want people to prosper in all dimensions. So then we bring simple questions to the partners, simple questions to the end clients, and eventually end up with a more clear picture whether things are progressing or not.
So it's not just about income. It is about health, nutrition, security, and above all, about whether living conditions are improving sustainably. The results do not remain on paper. They help partner organizations very concretely to further develop their offerings and respond better to the needs of their client. By now, 56 partner organizations worldwide are already participating in this approach, and more than 50,000 people take part in the surveys, some of them here in Brazil. And this is exactly where it becomes tangible for me what microfinance actually means, beyond numbers and concepts. With these impressions in my luggage, my journey slowly comes to an end. The past few days have not only shown me how complex this work is, but also how closely everything is interconnected. The partner organizations, their structure, the work of my colleagues on the ground, and above all, the clients that it is all about in the end. After our trip to the south of Brazil, I'm back in Sao Paulo, and I realize I'm taking away more than just answers. Above all, the stories of the people I was able to meet over the past few days. What remains above all is this. Microfinance is much more than just a loan. It is about giving people opportunities, accompanying them through difficult situations, and creating long-term change. Pedro sums this up perfectly at the end of our conversation.
Microfinance in Brazil offers a significant opportunity to reduce inequality. By investing in microfinance, investors directly support people who create their own livelihoods. and this has a powerful social impact. Ultimately, this sector needs investors who share a social vision. Supporting microfinance in Brazil means contributing to meaningful, long-term change.
However, this change can only happen if many stakeholders work together, from the partner organizations on the ground to the investors. That is why Nico and Constantine would like to address our investors directly one more time at the end.
We want to thank our investors, and we are really proud to be part of this movement. And I think it is a good integration between North and South in a respectful way. We always talk about how we operate as a grassroots, and we have this global local balance. So, and I think having the visit of you, Karen, here is the proof that we can keep this balance and connect the intentionality that is perhaps with our investors, with the possibilities and what is feasible in the global South. So I want to thank you for that.
Thank you.
I gotta agree. I totally support with the position from Nico that already replaces my answer. I would like to thank every investor in Europe. Thank you very much. And it wasn't for you, our work wouldn't exist.
Yeah, well, and thank you both for taking your time to answering all of my questions. I think for our listeners, this is really important to hear your voices and to hear the voice of the people that actually deal with the money that they provide to us. And it makes it a lot more tangible for them, more transparent. So, thanks for taking your time. And let's go for lunch.
Yeah,
it's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Cheers.
And with that, we've reached the end of this episode. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we've enjoyed producing it. A big thank you goes out to all my colleagues from the BAPU team in Sao Paulo, who made this trip possible. And of course to Isabel, Lucirene, Pedro and Guilherme, who kindly answered all my questions. At this point, we would normally announce the next episode, but this time everything is a little bit different. Because unfortunately, this episode is the last of Ethics and Euros. We had a great time hosting this podcast, and we would like to thank you very much for your loyalty and for listening over the past 3 years. Thank you for accompanying us on our podcast journey, and take care.